You don't expect us to listen to this self-pitying garbage, do you?
Hello, everybody. This is Dave Whispering. It is again with this! Melrose Place, Season 3, Episode 14, Sex, Drugs, and Rockin' the Cradle. Is this the second Cradle title we've had in this show? And here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Cradle.
Oh. Hello.
Jesus. Hi. I would say leave me out of this, but
I'm just
you
glad
can't.
To be alive, guys.
Sarah D. Bassinet was right there. Anyway, hi. We're here to talk Melrose Place. But first, we want to just tease our next Again with This episode. Number 35 is dropping February 19th. Let's watch James Eckhouse in Sawdust. Last time, we talked about Mrs. Walsh. This time, it's Mr. Walsh.
Is this like a sequel to the horror films?
No, it's a prequel. No, it's not. It's an episode of CBS Summer Playhouse in which he plays a guy who buys a circus and tries to run it and has a bad time.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it.
I was amazed.
I was amazed it happened. if we don't get to see Jim Walsh in clown makeup, I will frankly be furious.
What year is this? Is this like
1987.
Okay.
All right. So it's on YouTube. We'll link it in the show notes if you want to experience this before our discussion. But join us.
The other good thing is if he says, in full clown makeup, welcome to the X House.
It's Eck House.
Welcome to the Eck House.
Perhaps he does.
And then,
he does not. So join us at patreon.com/againwiththis to experience our discussion of that, as well as the 34 episodes that precede it. Lots and lots of bonus episodes and fun. Yes,
trivia
Dave.
Bit. That was actually the original first line of Welcome to the Jungle.
Welcome to the Eck House.
You've got fun and hair.
Yeah.
On your shoulders. Okay, let us talk about this episode of Melrose Place. Starting with our D plot, will Jeffrey move in with Matt or be annoying about it as usual? I think you know how it's going to go.
I have a guess. Might surprise you.
It won't.
It probably won't.
No.
So Jeffrey and Matt are over at Billy's for dinner. Jeffrey's being friendly and helping chop vegetables until the knife slips and he cuts himself. And because Susan doesn't know that, to quote Kelly, all this blood, it's infected, she just lightly tells him the first lesson of cooking is keep your eye on the blade. But Jeffrey panics and dumps all the vegetables in the sink while Matt hisses at him to, like, be cool, basically.
Then, my God, don't they know that in the Starverse, you can never make a salad when you have HIV? Come on.
No, you can't. It's also, again, also in the Starverse, another hallmark of salad making. There's seriously enough vegetables for, like, the entire halfway house where Matt used to work. It's so much. So.
Oh.
Jeffrey realizes he's making a scene and leaves, and Matt goes after him to talk him down on the stairs and, you know, deal with the cut. And Jeffrey flinches away and snaps that he doesn't want Matt to get sick, as though Matt, a sexually active gay male social worker employed at a hospital in the year 1994, is not aware of how HIV is transmitted, but it does give Matt the chance to PSA that unless he has an open wound, he will be fine, which of course we know he will. So Jeffrey hoarsely says he thinks he's okay, but it's always on his mind. He just wants to be part of life. Matt will be there with him. And then they, you know, they both decide to relax and they have like a little laugh and hug on the stairs, which is cute. They have so few cute moments that we have to savor them.
Yeah, it's true. In the midst of all the gay tragedy TM, which is exhausting, I can only imagine how Matt feels.
Poor Matt. So some number of days later, Matt sets an elaborate breakfast down in front of Jeffrey, who can't believe that Matt does this every day. Matt says he doesn't. He would like to, but it's not worth the hassle when it's just him. I have to once again raise my usual objection to people doing anything elaborate on a weekday before work. Like, just get out the door. Like, I'm
really
not a morning
it
person
reminds
here.
Me of, like, those when I was a kid and they would say like it's part of this nutritious breakfast. And then the breakfast was like cereal and eggs and orange juice and milk and a muffin. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, are you farmers? What the fuck? At my house, it was like a bowl of cereal. Who had time for that? It was like 6:30 in the morning. Ugh. Anyway.
Yeah.
Agree.
So Jeffrey's like, it's not that I wouldn't love to live with you, which, you know, apparently we missed him asking, which is they have to exposit that Matt has been pushing this agenda for the last week, according to Jeffrey.
Like, he's. Why didn't we see that, though?
Right. Like, the, you know, these are conversations that are worth having on camera. Again, why aren't we? But he says he's grateful for Matt calming him down when he cut himself the other night. But Jeffrey is so volatile and he needs time to settle out. And before Matt can answer, Amanda's at the door to say that, first of all, she's so sorry. And Matt is like, about what? And she says this, clip two.
Susan spoke to me. And
hi, man. You know my friend Jeffrey.
Hi.
Well, I just want to say I told Susan to calm down. There is no health hazard, and that includes the pool.
Thanks, Amanda. Thank you very much.
See, all you have to do is be upfront with me about these things.
Wow.
I mean, where to start? Again, why were all these scenes off camera? Like, not that we needed to see this, but it seems kind of out of character for, like, everyone involved. Like, for Jeffrey to have said anything to Susan, for Matt to have said anything to Susan, if Jeffrey was not present, like, I'm actually not sure what the issue was there, but, like, for Susan, who lives in the world, to be like, but you can get it from breathing. And if she's going to be like that, why didn't we see that? Because if she's going to have a heel turn, spoiler, maybe feed into it with that. I don't know. Very weird. And I think the show has too many characters and stories happening right now and is not doing a good job with this one at all.
Yeah. It after Matt shuts the door in Amanda's face, he then has to deal with Jeffrey, which is when we find out Jeffrey did not tell Susan, of course. Matt did. And
that's right.
He thinks that Matt told the secret to everyone, which Matt did blab to Susan and Billy without asking Jeffrey. So Jeffrey is right to be pissed about Matt violating his trust, which, by the way, I feel like no social worker would do.
Yeah.
But I guess he felt like he had to explain, you know, why Jeffrey was being so skittish when, you know, it's just a little
cut. Also, like, if he did bleed all over the salad, I think at some point you have to be like, you should not eat this. Rinsing it off is probably not sufficient.
Sure. But yes, you're totally right about the Susan conversation, given what happens later in the episode with other characters who we will get to. We're just like, why wasn't this part of building to this sudden, you know, as you say, heel turn? It's dumb. Anyway.
Yep.
Jeffrey then, some number of days later, finds Matt at lunch to repeat their initial meet cute at the same place where they first met. Jeffrey is starting to explain his position when Matt belatedly interrupts to apologize for telling his stupid friends Jeffrey's business. But Jeffrey forgives him. Sometimes he forgets the stress his situation puts on Matt. And Matt notes the situation puts stress on Jeffrey as well. Jeffrey says he's trying to put a lid on it, and Matt implores him not to do that and to share his feelings with Matt before it gets to a boiling point. But Jeffrey says Matt can't help him. And Matt suggests support groups. Yes. Jeffrey claims he will look into those. Believe it when I see it. But he also wants to take a little more time alone, and they agree that that's okay. And then they exchange I love yous. But Jeffrey is still not moving in with Matt. But he does erotically take Matt's hand across the table and stroke it in front of God and everyone right in the middle
in full lunchtime daylight. I mean, this was like this was big shit in 94. I remember watching this scene and being like, ooh, like, especially on Fox in primetime, like, it's a pity, but they really were trying everything they could to make this a real story. It just, life was not ready.
No. And that's where we leave them for now on To the C plot, Jake pushes Sydney away while Peter pushes his luck with Amanda. So Peter comes to see Amanda at work. He has heard some accounts are shaky and wants to know if she needs help. She defensively says he hired her to run the company, and she is. There was some backlash after Bruce's death. Meh, that'll happen, I imagine. Yeah. It's a very gossipy industry, and that story would have spread like wildfire
also,
real quick.
Yeah, Bruce's death. Interesting phrasing. Possibly yeah. responsible party.
But she's handling it. And then she basically dares Peter to fire her, and this seems to make him horny. And she admits she still can't shake the guilt about Bruce. Like, yeah. Makes sense? Mm-hmm. Peter says, sure, he killed himself in her office for a reason. But Peter knows she can take the pressure. Like, oh, the pressure that you came by to add to the pressure she was already feeling? Great. And speaking of pressure, clip three.
And don't forget about dinner tonight.
I might be a little late.
I'd rather you weren't. Oh, and I watch out for that Billy character. I think he has designs on you.
I mean, the writing of Peter in this and subsequent episodes is like just on the sentence level. I think he has designs on you. That Billy character, like, okay, dad from Dennis the Menace. Like, it just is a very weird, like, mid-century flavor to it that it's like, you never get me, Kappa. And then some accent choices are being made in the next couple of episodes that are really weird. Like right before this in the scene, he's like, you're tough, aren't you? Like it was just very like stylized Dick Tracy. And on top of that, his hair right now, it's like the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah.
Fucked Prince Valiant. And this is their evil giant suit wearing child. I still would, but it's a lot right now. And Jack Wagner is just rolling around in the catnip patch of like Hasselhoffian level delivery.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I don't hate it. It's just intense, I would say.
Yeah, he's trying a lot of stuff and he's clearly having so much fun. And like no one is there to be like, no, you can't do this because it clashes with what happened before, because no one is keeping track and it doesn't matter.
It's true. And it's a soap. And he's like, oh, a nighttime soap. I'll give even more percents. Like, okay. You know what, buddy? Good for you. You've earned the golf game. Go ahead.
He has designs on you. Like, Billy is plotting. The only designs Billy is making is with a spirograph, maybe.
A Nerf spirograph.
That's true. Those spokes are very pointy.
That's true.
So then Sydney goes to see Jake at his place in a way that gives us to understand he has been avoiding her, which was going to be hard because, you know, they work together. She is wearing this such an un-Sydney outfit. It's like a kindergarten teacher getup. She's in a white turtleneck, which is very of its time. But then over it is a corduroy dress with like shorts, sort of puffed sleeves and then snaps. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not a her look.
I would wear that rig today, which tells you that it's not a her look. I would also wear it over jeans because I'm me. I wanted to get back to, do you find it odd that she still works at Shooters?
Well, I mean, in the sense that he hasn't let her go yet.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Like, doesn't it seem like either she should have quit or he should have been like, this is weird? I mean, is she just like a really good waitress? Because I don't get that impression.
I think we are supposed to think she is a good waitress, A. B, she can't quit because of her parole situation.
Right.
And C, I think they're trying to have us not think about it by having
talk about it
and not showing her there at all. So
right.
That's, I think that's how they're getting around it.
I understand it's the like peach pit economy of sets,
sure,
and places issue, mm-hmm. but it just seems weird. Like even for a soap opera, it's like really like she right. wouldn't have offered to quit because it's awk anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, they already had
it's a
that.
Soap. Yeah,
they had that that exchange once already, so maybe they thought, okay, we have to wait at least 2 months before we do that again.
Maybe. Who knows?
Anyway, without much warmth, he lets her in so that she can tell him that she really was scared in Vegas, although she realizes that it looked bad, and he does not argue. But she really thought that Chris would hurt her and would not let her call Jake sooner than she actually did, and he threatened her life. He claims he believes her, but then flaps his arms like, so? And then he says this, clip four.
But you and I, we handle things differently. Well, let's just leave it at that.
I know. And that's why I was so grateful that you showed up. You're the only person that I can trust. And I just wanted you to know that the whole time we were in Vegas, I didn't sleep with him.
What do you mean? In Vegas.
I meant what I said. I didn't sleep with Chris really? In Vegas at all.
But you did sleep with him. Where?
Jake, I had to.
Where?
He was friends with that mobster, that guy who came into Shooters. And they said that if I didn't, they would hurt you. They would kill you. I did it for you, Jake.
I gotta get Shooters ready for lunch.
Jake, you've gotta believe me. I did it to protect you.
They just leave this in this unfinished, like, situation. They don't sort of cap it with him saying, I get it, or whatever. Like, and she doesn't go into details. It's just like, oh, you cheated on me? It's like, no, there were these soapy circumstances surrounding it. Blah.
Well, as usual, Sydney's in a position where she doesn't think anyone will believe her. And like the terms right. of the extortion were such that, of course, she's not going to tell Jake it happened. That's why it's extortion.
Yes.
But once she's in a position of explaining herself, she always does such a bad job. But then mm-hmm. I just feel like no one is sufficiently like nosy on soap operas,
right.
especially in situations that directly pertain to them. Mm-hmm. Like maybe a couple of follow-ups. You don't have to believe her, but
yeah.
Like, how did Chris know the guy? Where is Chris now? Like,
right.
I have a bunch of Chris follow-ups that have nothing yeah. to do with this part.
Where is he?
Yeah, where is he? I mean, like, I would like to think that the pit bosses found him and escorted him to a shallow grave in the desert outside.
Sure.
Trump, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know.
No, anyway. We don't.
That's where we leave Jake and Sydney for the episode, so hope you enjoyed that exchange. That's it.
Yeah.
So then Peter pops by Amanda's office some other number of days later and gets all suspicious that Amanda and Billy are having an obviously completely non-sexual working lunch at her desk and makes insinuations about what may be going on now, given their former romantic relationship, until Amanda comes up with a convenient errand to send Billy on and unloads on Peter when he's gone. Clip five.
How dare you bring up my romantic past in front of an employee like a jealous schoolboy?
Not jealous. Just curious. I checked around. I also understand that you were pregnant by this employee as well.
That is none of your business, and I will
when
not...
When I'm close to someone, I like to know where their emotional commitments lie. Did you want to keep his child? Did you love him? Do you love him now?
No, I do not love him. I found it's dangerous to love anybody. Now back off.
Everything else under control? Good. Don't forget about our dinner tonight at the club.
You didn't tell me about this.
Yes, I did. I want to introduce you on a more personal level to some of the other investors.
I can't go. I've got work to do. I'm in a crisis situation here.
Amanda, I need you at the club tonight. See you at 8.
Again, I mean, I know the reason that we didn't see him asking around is that we know the facts that he was soliciting already. We just need to have them repeated. But, like, who was he asking around to that is spilling tea on their boss? Like, yikes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and also, like, just the mentions of the club.
Yeah.
I keep envisioning a stonecutters, basically, like a lot of fezes yes. are involved, which would make me smile.
This is also Alas. One of these scenes in this episode where a boom mic is going crazy above Amanda's head. So you can see that in the visual aids. I know it's hard.
It really is swooping around quite crazily. It's awesome.
You sure it wasn't
it's not awesome. It's bad.
I'm not sure it wasn't a bad. Yeah, I know that the height differential between the two of them is significant because she's quite short, but still, whew, it's
yeah,
been a while.
Guys, lavaliers, get the knack.
So then Amanda and her cropped sweater, which you can also see in the visual aids, just keeping it cash, are going over paperwork at her place when Peter pops by and offers to take her for drinks and to talk things over. She curtly asks him to call first next time and also notes that they've gone out the last two nights. That was enough, and she has a lot of work to do. Apparently, that was the wrong thing to say as he takes one big, intimidating step forward and gets in her space and says this, clip six.
You know something? I hate when you throw work in my face. Do you realize that I have been at an operating room since 4 a.m., and I still have time for you?
Peter, really, we'll talk about this tomorrow. I think we should cool things down a bit. Keep our relationship more professional.
Oh, wake up, Amanda. The only reason you have this job is because you slept with me.
I'm not going to listen to this. Get out of here.
Arm grab.
Don't you dare hurt me.
I wouldn't think of it. But remember something. Nobody walks out on me. No one.
This turn, I think, was more effective in retrospect. Like, while I was watching it, I was like, this seems like it came out of nowhere. But then it was like, oh, no, he actually has been controlling this whole time. So
yeah.
I buy it.
Yeah, I buy it, too. And he plays it well. And he is aware that he's not supposed to be sympathetic. And so some of the ham bone stuff, I think, really works.
Yep. All right, moving on to our B plot. Michael is little help to Joe in getting her baby back because he has his own problems. So,
yeah.
Some fucking how, John Saxon as Henry Waxman is still Joe's lawyer. And now she and her very smart dark red pantsuit are in his office explaining to him about the ridiculous scheme that she ridiculously entered into with Kimberly to keep the baby out of the Carter's clutches. And he does not mince words. Clip seven.
Joe, I can't believe what I've heard. You've messed everything up big time. I had a great case prepared for an appeal, and you'd have had a chance of getting your baby back. But now, I have no choice but to pretend we never had this conversation.
Please, Mr. Waxman.
Joe, you obviously need some help. Rest. And I'm afraid a good criminal lawyer.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
few things.
Yeah. I assumed he was out of the picture. Which is why she even entertained this whole idea. Like, if he was still her lawyer and preparing an appeal, why Why did she not wait to see how that played out? Why didn't we know that he was still in the picture and preparing an appeal? I mean, I know why, soaps, but still, come on.
I mean, and is the appeal, what are the grounds for appeal? Because if it's not ineffective assistance of counsel, I don't know what the fuck that statute is for. Mm-hmm. Also, I started humming, please, 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 Mr. Waxman. Hey, because I was incensed by his presence and had to find something fun to do.
Mm-hmm. The only good thing about this scene,
amazing, though,
other than her suit, is, is that it's just funny when someone outside of the situation, like same thing with the fertility doctor who Kimberly was like, look, what if I wanted to buy a baby? And he's like, what the fuck? Like, it's just funny when someone comes along into these ridiculous plots and is like, no, this is crazy. Because when you're in it as a viewer, you're like, yeah, sure, of course. Like, why wouldn't you try this? And then it's just amusing when they have to have someone in universe be like, No. This is all illegal. I can't help you. Also, what? Anyway.
It is pretty funny. And depending on who they get to do it, like, this was not a good choice. She should have gone to another lawyer that she retained to sue her previous lawyer for stinking up the joint.
Yes.
But that aside, I do respect this show for, I think, more often than a lot of soaps, like getting out a giant pin occasionally and popping the soap bubble and being like, this is not how the world is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay. So speaking of good outfits, Jane's. Okay. It's crazy. I can't really describe it. You have to go to the visual aids and see it. It's like a crop top and matching like skater skirt. It's like very stripey, which I always like. It has like a 76, I think, on the boob and like pockets. And it's like, it's very weird and very out of character for her, but at least it looks like fashion. Like, it looks fashion-y. It looks like someone who is in the industry, something they would wear.
It looks designed and like homemade. And I don't mean that in the like, you know, homemade Michael Kors saying that like it's bad way.
Country craft. Yes.
Yeah. But country crafts, Appalachian Barbie. But she almost never wears stuff. Like sometimes she'll wear stuff that's like kooky or weird. And you're like, okay, it's not that it's unstylish. It's that a designer wouldn't wear that. But like, I agree. First of all, the skirt had pockets. I'm in.
Yeah.
And second of all, it looked like some thought went into it, even though the colorway is not my thing.
I agree with that.
At least it seemed designery, even if it was ugly. So yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yep. Anyway, she's working on what with what money? Don't know, but she's still at the studio. So she's impatient when she gets a phone call from Michael. But he soldiers on with his whole rap anyway. Ever since Vegas, he can't stop thinking about her. She thought she was clear. She felt nothing, and it was just something to do. And then she hangs up on him while he continues to beg. And I have to say, both the blondes being cool, her and Allison, like, I don't know who I am or where I am anymore, but I'm into it.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really work for Jane.
No.
It is disconcerting that she's not being a simp. But it is also enjoyable to see Mancini getting Mancini'd by the first Mrs. Mancini. I don't hate it.
Yep. And later, she's still working when she gets a delivery of roses. And then she reads the card and tells the guy that actually she thinks Michael would really like them delivered to his house. Like, look, bitch, you also fooled around. This is not a proportional response. No one likes Kimberly and she did steal a baby, but still. However, she writes down the address for the guy and smirks. And, you know, I guess Michael does deserve this given everything he's done. So fine.
Yeah.
And Kimberly is very nicely done up and has to put the baby down when the guy comes to deliver Jane's flowers to her and say they're from Michael. And I feel less bad for her when the delivery guy comments that it took him a couple of hours to find the house. And she snits that he should get a map, shuts the door in his face. It's like, everyone's doing the best they can. Don't be a bitch. But she's very happy and smug until she reads the card. Clip 8.
What the hell? Jane, you will always be my wife. My one true love. Love, Michael. And that's sweet.
Bye-bye flowers.
Oh, boy. Yeah, she... I understand that it's a soap, and nobody's going to put the leads in sweatpants, but, like, it's a newborn. What's with the crushed mm-hmm. velvet in this mm-hmm. entire episode?
Yeah.
And who's going to clean up the broken glass when you're walking around, like, you know, Mama Happy Garden in your bare feet with your kid? Mm-hmm. But well yeah. played, Jane. Did exactly mm-hmm. what you wanted it to do.
True. I also love her line reading on, what the hell?
That is really good.
What fucking now? But she waits until the next morning after Michael has come home, changed, and gotten an entire night's sleep to jostle uh-huh. him awake by faking sure. an earthquake and then telling him his whole world is coming down around him and throwing the card at him. She does explain it's because she was too tired to stay up and yell at him, which, you know, she has a newborn, so fair.
Okay.
He tries to minimize it, but she gives him the option to stay with her and the baby, Michael Jr., or run off with his slut. And if the latter, his bags are already packed. And then Maria runs in to say the baby's still having trouble breathing. Michael thinks maybe they should take him to the hospital. And to Kimberly's question, he confirms that his choice is to stay with her and the baby. But I guess they don't bring him to the hospital because when Michael gets home from work that night, Kimberly worriedly reports that his fever just keeps rising. Michael gives him a quick peek and then announces they're going to the ER. And Kimberly gasps that they can't and babbles that they'll want a family history and a birth certificate and they'll take him away. And Michael is finally, after like weeks, like, okay, seriously, where is this baby even from? And she claims she bought him on the black market. And Michael's understandably upset, but says what matters now is that they treat him, true, and he will deal with the paperwork. So then the next day, Joe comes to the hospital to ask Michael how the baby is doing, since she heard from Matt that he had been admitted. And at this point, I thought it wasn't clear to me if it was like Matt told her an update because he knew it was her kid, or if it was just like, oh, yeah, Michael brought in this baby they have now, or what? Because again, off-screen conversation. We don't yeah. know what Matt knows at this point. Annoying.
Right. Yep.
So Michael's only slightly put off by Joe referring to him as her baby, apparently buying Kimberly's postpartum psychosis story, but Joe does not have time for his attempts to analyze her. Clip 9.
Your bitch wife stole my baby. If either of you ever think I'm going away or giving up, you're both in for a shock.
Now you listen here. Threats aren't going to get you anywhere. Now, I am sympathetic to your grief, but I believe my wife.
But how about a blood test? I mean, if you believe Kimberly, you might as well have the proof that I'm crazy, or maybe you're afraid to see that the test will show us my baby.
All right, calm down. You'll get your blood test.
When?
Be upstairs at the lab. It's room 320. In an hour, I'll meet you there.
I love that his line deliveries throughout this plot are like, I didn't really want a baby, and here's nope. my chance to get rid of this one. Like, all right. Fair.
Yeah.
Not relatable. An angle you often see on TV, but I respect it.
Yes. Your bitch wife stole my baby. I don't have time for niceties. Like, just getting to it.
I love that he's like, I don't know, like, he believes his wife, but also, like, he has been given a story by his wife. Otherwise, I think he would completely believe that it was possible that oh, this totally. Is what happened.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, he's met Kimberly. He knows. Yeah. Like,
he does.
So sometime later, Michael calls Joe from a hospital payphone and, sounding pretty unconcerned, confirms what she already knows. Clip 10.
You're right.
It's your baby.
Oh, thank God. So you're gonna help me?
Well, it depends on what you mean by that. You know, the way I look at it, you lost custody to the Carters, so...
I know you don't want me to send Michael Jr. back to them.
That is not his name.
Well, we have to call him something, Joe. Anyway.
Look at it this way. If Kimberly and I raise him, Well, then you might even get a chance to see him once in a while. We could call you his aunt. How about that?
Michael, you're making a very big mistake. Nobody, not even people as twisted as you two, are going to keep me from my baby.
Oh, Joe. I'm afraid it's a done deal.
Hello?
Michael's also bad? Who saw that coming? JK.
Oh, God. The line delivery of, we gotta call him something.
I know.
Like it's a kitten that wandered onto the deck. Okay.
Yeah, so that's the fate of Le Bébé this week. Stay tuned. Finally, our A-plot. While Allison goes to rehab, Susan exits the love triangle. At D&D, Amanda has heard from Twin Oaks that Allison checked in and is not thrilled that the agency is going to have to pay for it, which, like, are you? I thought that's how insurance works. What? Well, I don't claim to know. She orders Billy to get them out of it. Billy knows it's part of D&D's standard employee coverage. And Amanda reminds him that Allison was supposed to not be an employee anymore by his hand. So Billy has to explain to her how firing Allison for being an alcoholic would be illegal. And Amanda is both disgusted and impressed that Billy has trapped her like this. Clip 11.
You know, some people may like you because you're such a nice guy. But I like your sneaky side. Do it again and I fry you.
Okay.
I am looking forward to everyone visiting the visual aids and trying to explain to us what face Andrew Hsu is trying to make during this conversation.
Yeah. It's a lot of bad choices here. He just does not seem to be able to pin down emotions in a lot of his plot lines this week.
Yeah, like congested is not that great of a catch-all. For these things. Yeah.
So over to the Twin Oaks exterior. This is the rehab. I swore this was also a place that they used for CU, but I checked because I am not well. And there was another building that had railings like that with stairs on either side, but it was not the same place. Anyway, Allison's in group therapy, blaming her drinking on her stresses at work and, you know, with her dad, until another dude, played by David James Elliott from JAG, starts cracking up loudly and, of course, navally. He asks Marsha, the judge from Legally Blonde, if she really expects them to listen to Allison's self-pity and garbage. You knew another credit of hers that was in the visual aids. She is also from Felicity.
Yes, she is. When Felicity gets wasted at that frat party and then asks for the morning after pill, she's the clinic worker who I think is just trying to deliver a PSA via the writers, but is a super bitch about it and really judgy. Like, it's a college that you work at.
Yeah.
This can't be the first person who's even been in today. And she could have been assaulted. Maybe give her a second?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, she's
nice. Fuck you,
Marsha.
Just kidding. She's fine here.
Allison tensely says Terry just can't accept that her story might be different from everyone else's, but Terry wearily says her story is the same as everyone else's. She just doesn't know it yet. And since Allison needs a work detail, she assigns Allison and Terry to work together in the kitchen. And on their shift, Allison tries to ingratiate herself to Terry by praising his football skills. So he's in the NFL, I guess, but he is in no mood. Clip 12.
Get this straight, okay? I don't care what you think, so you can stop hitting on me.
I wasn't. I was just being friendly.
No, you weren't. You were sucking up to me so you wouldn't have to take a look at what you are.
Okay. Forget it. Let go of me.
I'll tell you what you are. You're a butt-kissing little blonde bimbo who's too afraid to admit that she's a drunk.
Go to hell.
Oh, I've been there, babe. I'm on my way out. I don't know about you.
Ooh. Terry. Didn't have to tell it like it is.
Navally.
footballily. The next day, Susan's working out at home when Allison calls, assuming that she would get the machine, but then soldiering on and asking Susan to pass on a message to Billy. She is supposed to invite the person who helped her get into treatment to a special meeting that night, and it would mean a lot to Allison if Billy could come. And adds that Susan is a good friend for passing on the message. And then Susan hangs up and pretty clearly ponders whether she is going to even do that. And then in the kitchen at the rehab, Terry throws a scrubber at Allison and tells her to quit fucking around. She pushes back at him this time to quit being such a dick to her, which seems to turn him on. And he admits that his behavior is because he's not just an alcoholic, he's also a sex addict. And then explains what that means in detail, because in 1994, people did not know what that meant. And at the end of it, he adds that Marcia doesn't know about this, so Allison has to keep a secret. But Allison thinks this is obviously bothering him, so he should bring it up at the meeting that night. He's not so sure, but he is also sorry about before. And then it's the meeting, and Allison has a chair next to her, but no one in it. And afterward, she calls Billy. And at the apartment, Susan tells him not to pick up, so Allison gets the machine and just hangs up without leaving a message. Susan, you shit. Like, I get it, but you can't participate in the intervention and then also do this, I feel. You know?
Yeah, agree. And we've had no indication. Like, why would you get as far as the intervention and then be like, and that's it for me and Allison's bullshit? Like,
right. Yeah. Like, right. If her whole thing is, and we are going to hear it later, but if her thing is like, I don't believe that she's doing, that she really does have a problem that she is not in control of, and that, she, you know, she's doing this for attention or whatever, like, why wouldn't the point be, you know, well, I'm going to tap out before this intervention then, because I don't believe in it and I don't think it'll help her.
You right.
Know? Dumb. Back at Twin Oaks, yeah. Allison climbs out a window and ends up back at the bar that scared her straight in the previous episode. And apparently goes in, because when we see her next, she is climbing back into her room, shit-faced, and displeased to see Terry in there waiting for her. She accuses him of lurking with the intention of trying to tear off a little. Yikes.
Wow.
He says that after her friend didn't come to the meeting, he was concerned about her, and she drunkenly deflects. Clip 13.
Let me tell you something, Mr. Football Star. You're not my type. You're too beefy.
I mean, that was great. And as usual, Courtney Thorne Smith's drunk acting is top notch.
Yep.
You're too beefy. Like, too that's just such an beefy Allison phrase. But also, he's exactly the right amount of beefy. Like,
yes!
He's so cute, David James so Elliott. It's gross.
Yes. Yeah. So they go on. Clip 14.
Now get out!
You've been drinking.
So what? Rome wasn't built in a day.
You can't do this! They'll kick you out of here!
Oh, now okay. They will, screamy.
Thank you. Maybe keep it down, buddy. Like,
I'm calling an audible. Yeah, apparently.
So Allison dares Terry to tell Marcia on her, but instead he grabs her by the hair, splashes cold water in her face, and makes her look at herself in the mirror to try to get her to admit to herself that she is an alcoholic. And then he throws her into bed to sleep it off and says she's going to stay there all night. He's going to stay there all night to make sure she does, because he gives a damn. So she wakes up the next morning and thanks Terry for helping her. He's going to keep the previous night a secret, but she has to commit to being sober. She knows she will keep his secret, too. And he's on his way out before he stops to make it creepy. Clip 15.
I watched you last night when you slept. I could hear the old me saying, take her. She's drunk, what the hell? But somehow, I think you're a friend, and I want to see you get well. And that's helping me get well. I'll see you.
Terry. Thanks. I owe you one.
Hey, thanks for not raping me.
Raping
I owe you a smoothie.
Me like you apparently have done in the past. Cool. Yeah. Frenzies. Wow.
Yeah. Ugh. That's That's real weird. Like, I feel like there's a way you could write that where it was supposed to be a cautionary tale where he's like, you should be aware that if you're that out of it, like, someone may do that to you. Not in a victim-blaming way, but just like, this is a thing that could happen. And, you know, just think about that if you're not so sure you want to get sober. Like, there's an episode of Mom about that where someone who assaulted Christy when she was super drunk, like, comes to their meeting and she has a kind of PTSD reaction to it. And that's what the episode is about. But that's not what that was. That was just him being like,
no.
I used to be a rapist, but I'm better now. And she's like, hey, thanks. Like,
yeah.
Really.
The more you know.
Yeah. So some number of days later, Amanda and Billy are eating lunch together at her desk, as we already discussed. Amanda mentioning she has insurance papers for Allison to sign. Billy offers to bring them over, but Amanda wearily tells him he's going to have to let Allison go emotionally, not that he's going to have to fire her. But after Peter comes in to wave his dick around, as we've already also discussed, Amanda gives Billy the papers to take to Twin Oaks, and he takes off. But given that Allison thinks that Billy stood her up at the meeting, she is cold when she sees him, and he has no idea why. Clip 16.
Anyway, I just wanted to say that I'm proud of you.
It's crap, Billy. If you're so proud, you would have been at the meeting.
Meeting? Wait, what are you talking about?
Come on, Billy. I called Susan. I told her how important it was for you to be here yesterday, and you didn't show.
You told Susan? With everything that has happened with us, we are still friends. You can trust me. And if I had known about it, I would have been there. Do you believe me?
Yeah, I do. I'm sorry.
Uh-oh, this is going to be bad for Susan.
Yeah, I just love that what is unsaid by Allison is you, Andrew Hsu, are not a good enough actor to sell if this was a lie.
Yep.
Although I actually find that charming in his reaction here.
Yeah.
That he's like, look, we're friends. You could trust me. I would have showed up. Like, he doesn't quite sell it as an actor. Ergo, he really sells it for the character. So,
Yeah. So then he goes home to Susan, who is as oblivious to his mood as he was to Allison's earlier, until he yells at her for not giving him the message. And she claims she forgot and then whines that everything's an emergency with Allison, which, to be fair, it definitely has been since Susan came to town. And instead of responding to that, Billy makes this about message courtesy generally, which, again, also fair. My parents, when I lived at home, used to forget to give me my phone messages all the time, and it made me crazy. But enough about me. Susan says she saw how Allison manipulated guys in college, and acting helpless, or rather, as she puts it, the Camille routine, worked every time. Billy doesn't know what Susan is so jealous about, and it turns out Susan has her own shit we did not know about. Clip 17.
She's not pulling an act. Allison's an alcoholic.
I have heard that word my whole life. You know that? You know what it means to me? It means that Mom can't come to the school play because she's tired. It means that Mom can't make dinner because she's got a headache. Mom is screaming at you every time you make the slightest bit of noise in the house because she's drunk and she's stupid and she's throwing up. And the whole time, Daddy is apologizing and whispering and taking care of her. And you know where I was in all of that? Nowhere. I didn't exist. The only thing that existed was Mom's alcoholism.
I am sorry about that. I really am. But
Allison's different. No, she's not, Billy. It's always the needy people that get the attention. But I'm strong. Why can't you just leave her alone and give us a chance?
I won't desert a friend who needs my help. All right, that's who I am.
Billy, Allison doesn't need you. I need you. Billy, we could be so good together. If you would just give us a chance, the only chance we have is if you stop seeing her. Tell me you can do that.
I can't. Susan, Allison loves me, and I guess I'm always gonna love her one way or another. And that's just the way it is.
Why would you give this material to these two very, I'm sure, fine people who are also trying to be actors?
I have to say, as a motivation, this for why Susan is being like this, it makes sense. And this is a pretty good way to get her to exit the story. But it also does not make sense that it wouldn't have come up until now.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I thought that speech was actually not bad, or wouldn't have been bad if there had been build up.
Yes.
But yep, there wasn't. And like, whatever roots there are in college of Allison's alcoholism, like, mm-hmm, that she was a manipulative Camille is right, does not track.
Yeah.
Maybe she was a mean drunk.
Yes.
But, and we've seen some of that and enjoyed it, frankly. Miss you, girl.
We have.
Yeah, but I mean, this could have been really interesting, but also this is completely the wrong show.
Yeah.
For this kind of nuance. Like, I understand that they sort of looked at the character and were like, well, she's got to go. Volte-face. But.
Yes. Yeah.
It's frustrating.
I mean, the other thing about it, too, is that, like, if you had this much resentment about it for this long, like, you didn't have to still be friends after college, you know, yeah, like, friendships fade. I mean, certainly even more so back then than they do now, where it's like you aren't still following each other on Instagram or whatever the fuck. Like, you know, you didn't have to call her. You could have just stayed gone.
Yeah. So, yeah. And yeah, it just makes no. I mean, if this were like, you know, a straight drama, then you, mm-hmm, could sort of have like backstory fill in about how she was also acting as a caretaker for Allison, and it, yes, was a substitute relationship. Yep. Blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Note: yep, I am not a licensed therapist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an unlicensed therapist. But as it is, it's just like you put her in this scene with this heavy shit that comes out of nowhere, and then, yep, every now and then there's a two shot with Andrew Hsu looking like, he might smell something burning.
Mm-hmm.
And it just is like, guys, you know how earlier we were saying that we appreciate that you have characters say, like, every now and then, like, but that's crazy. This is a soap.
Yeah.
This is a soap.
Yeah. So at group the next day, everyone sees Allison and Terry eye fucking each other, but Allison then interrupts everyone observing them and says that because of how she's seen Terry open up and face things, she is ready to admit she is an alcoholic, and everyone claps. And the next night, Billy runs into Susan in the courtyard on the way out with her last box, and she returns his keys. And he claims he doesn't want her to leave. Clip 18.
I mean, it's gotta be a way we can work things out.
You know what that is. I should have seen this from the beginning. The two of you are like bookends, and there I was like an idiot trying to break up a set.
I'm sorry. I honestly care for you. And that hasn't changed.
Go to hell, Billy.
Bye!
And we never see her again.
Yep. That's a button on that performance. So after group, as Terry walks Allison back to her room, she thanks him for his help and for her inspiration, LOL. Not for her, he would not have been able to be completely honest with himself. And then he leans in and kisses her, and she stops him for both their sakes. He protests that it's real, but she says goodnight and ducks into her room before he can talk her into anything. But it's clear she is shook / super horny for him, and, you know, we get it.
Yeah, and they actually have really good chemistry, even though, like, she's not the shortest person in the cast, and he, mm-hmm, is still a full foot taller than
so
her,
tall.
And trying to frame some of these scenes is so awkward. You could see that her neck is in pain.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, he does a lot of leaning on counters. It, mm-hmm, it's a thing.
And that's the episode. Let us name our M VP. Boy. I'm going to say Matt. Not so much the tattling on Jeffrey's business to his dumb friends, but for keeping it together when Jeffrey is being like a skittish rabbit that he's trying to calm down all the time.
I think Allison, drunk Allison mostly, yeah. But also sober Allison for looking at Terry and being like, that's Jag and I'm going to break me off a piece.
Yeah. That's a good choice. Mm. Least valuable player. Susan, you could have changed the course of things if you had been honest about your whole deal earlier, perhaps, or at least not pretended you were on board with Allison's recovery journey and then sold her out in a really shitty way that, you know, made her think that you were her friend when you're not, and you were playing out shit with your mom from olden times that she didn't know about and neither did anyone else.
Yeah. Go to an Al-Anon meeting. Waxman. But I was doing an appeal as a surprise. What? Get out.
Another excellent choice. You did it.
I think so. Next time on Again With This, the gang is putting the ass back in Christmas. As Terry tries to stuff Allison's stocking, Jeffrey fails to make the Yuletide gay. Everyone saw Mommy stealing baby claws, and Amanda gets Scrooged. Go stand under the missile no of our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book and give yourself the gift of beautiful illustrations by Ms. Julie Kane, so browse on over there today. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you extra content. I'm bitch wife Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is metaphorically lethal starverse salad prep Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is exactly beefy enough. Talk to you next time.